Good morning. It's time for the Clay County Corner, coming to you live from the historic Clay County Courthouse in Salina, Tennessee. For the next hour, the Clay County Corner will inform you of what's happening in our community. Sit back and enjoy the program.
Good morning, everyone. I just received word that we're getting ready to go live in the living color again here on the Clay County Corner from the historic Clay County Courthouse. We've got a great show lined up this morning. Hopefully, we know it's going to be very informative. I know Director of Schools is here with us. And introduce yourself, ma'am, this morning to everyone.
My name is Misty Strong, and I'm the Supervisor of Curriculum and Instruction for Clay County Schools.
Is that a new position for you?
It is. I feel like I've always had a few new hats each year to fill, a few new roles that I've walked into, but very excited to fill this one, and it's a very exciting time, so we're all doing our best to prepare.
Okay, now, folks, how's that a good way to start the show this morning? Once again, it's a pleasure being able to come into your homes this morning, as we do each Thursday morning here at 9 o'clock. And we appreciate that, and we appreciate the folks that help make this possible every Thursday morning. Remind you that this will be rebroadcast this evening at 6 o'clock on WVFB FM 101.5 Kicks Country, and also it'll be streamed at a later date on the Del Hollow Horizon newspaper site. So there's all kinds of chances to listen to this, and I know today we do have a couple of very, very important folks here with us today, and that is talking about things, you know, concerning the schools with the situation that we have now with the COVID virus and those type of things. We know it's a major problem not only in Clay County but all over the state of Tennessee and really all over the country and all over the world now, because it's a big, big problem, and it's something that has to be solved in a very, 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 very quick manner now. You know exactly what's going to happen, because it's getting traditional time to start schools, and we know that the education of our citizenry is probably the most important job that anyone can have. But with that, we're going to take a little short break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about schools here in Clay County, and you know, find out just exactly what the plans are. And as we know, you know, at this time, any kind of plan right now is very fluid. It's subject to change, not only from internal things from here in the county, or from external documents and decrees and emergency type things coming from other places. But right now, we take a little short break, and we'll be back just in a few minutes.
Macon Bank and Trust offers a new and better checking account with free e-checking. Enroll for e-statements to avoid a $6 monthly minimum balance charge and enjoy free ATM cash withdrawals at some ATMs across the nation. Free online banking and mobile banking with mobile deposit. Free online bill pay, MasterCard debit card, and 50 free checks at opening. Talk e-checks with us today. Macon Bank and Trust, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Come grow with us. Third-party data or messaging fees may apply.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
Welcome back, everyone. We were just sitting here jabbering a little bit between times. I know it's great to have folks here with us that we know, an old friend, I worked under him a little once upon a time when he was director of schools over in Overton County with the Exceed folks, Matt Eldridge. And, of course, I know that she was one of my wife's favorite students, and I think we may even be cousins, I think, maybe. So, but it's great to have those folks with us. And we're going to talk about some very serious stuff this morning, and I guess Matt might just let you kind of fill folks on it, just exactly, you know, what the plans are.
Well, we've met all summer, seems like, every week at least, with all the Upper Cumberland. We've had physicians come in, education department from the state come in, talk to us, and tell us what we need to do and what we can. And there's about, out of the 18 of us, we're about 15 of us are doing as close to what we can the same, and we're going to offer a virtual school or the regular type setting we usually have. And so if kids want to attend like they have in the past, and if they feel scared, their parents, we're going to provide virtual school, and then with a instrument, a Chromebook, that they can do it from home and log in and do it live with us.
Okay, now, Matt, I guess Missy might be a good person to talk about the program that you're going to use for virtual learning. I know that most of us that look online have seen the certification of teachers in the Google Teacher program. Mm-hmm. You want to maybe describe that a little bit, Missy?
Yes. During the summer months, June and July, all of our teachers across the district have been completing Google for Education Level 1 training. And what that is an online course of 13 units that instructs teachers through models and practice, all of those elements of remote learning and instruction of how things would change in an all-virtual environment. So the two options that all of our students have for pre-K through 12 is to, number one, be on-campus. So on-campus instruction looks like what Mr. Eldridge said, regular school. And that would be attending in the school building at which you were enrolled, and we're going to be providing bus routes as normal. So that's our first option. Now, if you do the first option, then that means you would complete a registration packet, knowing that all of your classroom instruction is going to be on campus. But even those classroom teachers that are teaching kids on campus will still be doing things a little bit differently. So we're going to increase our paperless contact. So that means that we're going to try to reduce our contact between teachers and students to students, so that we can control some of our contact and touching and spacing. We're going to increase spacing between students in the hallways and in the classrooms, and just across the school, a cafeteria, water fountains, bathrooms. That's going to require a lot of planning and scheduling. So those pieces of the school day are going to look and feel different. We're going to also increase our cleaning and sanitization across the school building, sanitizing between classes at the high school, as well as closing our water fountains. That was a big contact at each of at the water fountains within each hallway. Each of our schools, Solana K-8, Hermit Springs School, and Clay County High School, all have a no-contact water fountain, which means if the student has his or her own bottle or container, they could take it to the water fountain, place the container underneath. No touching is required around the mouth or the hands area, so it's a no-contact water filling station. We hope to increase those throughout the schools, but right now we each have one. So hopefully that will reduce some of our contact within schools for the students attending at school. So the second thing is that students pre-K through 12 will also have the option to receive their instruction all virtual. So on the virtual learning path, you're going to be in a different environment. You're going to be off campus, not in the school building, and every student pre-K through 12 will be provided with a Chromebook and charger as the device to access their learning and instruction. Now, this does not mean that we're going to cut them off from the teacher. That's one of our parents' big concerns, is that they won't have teacher access. That's not what we're doing at all. We're just giving them access to the teacher through a different way, through not being in the seat in front of them. So they're going to use that through the platform of Google Classroom, and that's part of what the teachers have been training this summer. And with Google Classroom, they can implement paperless assignments, so they can submit assignments, tests, quizzes virtually without having to turn in a paper. Also, we're going to be utilizing online learning platforms where we're going to allow students access to text online. Their textbooks, read alouds, things like that will all be available as audio files. So that's two big differences in how we're going to learn. But what we're not changing is that the students are always at the forefront of our plans. They are our most important factor in all of our plans. So anything that we think sounds good, we always consider what will it be like for the students. Because that's what we don't want to lose sight of.
Right. I'm wondering, too, have you considered something like the Zoom program where the teacher will actually, can they bring up students and live?
Through Google, part of the Google Suite for Education, another component of the teacher's training this summer has been Google Meet. And with Google Meet, it works off of the student's email address that they've already had. Those are devices they've already been using for several years now. And through the student's email account, they have access to Google Meet. Google Meet is a way to do live video conferencing and recorded video conferencing with participants. So that's going to be our main platform is Google Meet. And it doesn't require any extra passwords. So once they're logged into their Chromebook, it's a piece, a program that runs from the Chromebook.
Okay. As far as the teacher screen, the student screen, will they be able to view the other folks in participation at the same time that they are?
The main focus of if you're doing all virtual instruction is the teacher.
Right.
Now the other students in the classroom, no, not necessarily.
Okay, they'll be seeing from the teacher station.
The main focus is the teacher's instruction, but the teacher will also share their screen. It's called a screen share.
Right.
So whatever the students that are sitting in class see, the student that's sitting off campus will also have access and audio and visual.
So what you're saying is that during the day, that the regular class, the teacher is going to be teaching online at all times, really, and just that with the normal classroom structure part of it, and part of it is going to be the structured part that they are required to be there. Mm-hmm. And this is going to put, especially on, of course, our high school students are at the point where they can do that. They're going to have to assume a lot of responsibility for their education. It's not going to just be thrown out there and you get it. Now you're going to be responsible and have to be there every day. Right, Matt?
It is. And I'll tell you what this has done. It's unfortunate that this happened, this pandemic that's hit us all, but it has propelled all of us a little bit further along in technology and what we can do and what we've had to learn. So our students will have more opportunities, and what we're basically turning to, and y'all will see this, Thomas, you've probably seen this too, is one of these days if there's a local child that we don't offer something, they may be logging into Cookeville High School and taking that class there and them drawing that percentage of the day of BEP funding for them. But that's where we're moving to an education, just like you'd spoken about how colleges have been. High schools are now doing the same thing.
You know, that's one of our dreams many years ago, wasn't it, man, with World Exceeds. We did it a few times.
And you led that, Mr. Watson. You know that, Thomas. You led that and helped Upper Cumberland jump into that before a lot of places were.
And I think, one of the greatest things that, I heard teachers say then when we were working on this, and that was, and this is the very same thing I know that they're feeling now, is that personal contact. I cannot touch my students. Well, mm-hmm. The pandemic has made it impossible anymore to get that real close, mm-hmm. Where you can actually get close to a student and talk to them and explain things to them. Now it's got to be that distance, and that's going to make, teaching a little bit more impersonal, isn't it, than what it's ever been? And because, there's not going to be, but I don't know how we're going to do it with kindergartners where you, because they love their teachers and they love their classmates and
I think our teachers are really focusing on keeping that relationship. So that's part of what you would gather trust and respect and almost a cohesiveness in the classroom. But we want to maintain that relationship with students even if we are taking those extra distancing and safety precautions.
Okay, now, Missy, Matt's had to step out a minute. Let's talk about I know your position is a change. It's new for you, but that's not the only position this year in the county that's been changed, is it?
No, it's not. We have lots of new faces in our schools. I'm going to start first with our principals. Due to some rearranging with administration, we also have some rearranging with our teachers as well. So the principals of each school have changed a bit, and then some have not. At Clay County High School, we welcome Ms. Tia Arms, who she's a welcome face there because she's been a math teacher there as well. So Ms. Tia Arms will be leading Clay County High School this year with her assistant principal as Daniel Strong. So we've got a new and an existing that's returning
so the administration is not completely new now.
That's right. Just a little bit of change. Then at Hermitage Springs School, Mr. Mike G. is moving from Salina K-8 to Hermitage Springs School, so he's not a totally new face because he was the principal at Salina K-8 last year. So he's going to be replacing Mr. John Denton at Hermitage Springs School as the principal. And then at Salina K-8, we have Mr. David Maxfield as the principal, and he's not a totally new face either because he was the social studies teacher at Salina K-8 for 7th and 8th grades as well as the math teacher.
He was a student here once upon a time, wasn't he? I believe he was a student here once upon a time.
Once upon a time, he was. I'm not going to say how many years ago. He probably wouldn't be my friend anymore if I did. But Miss Monica Weir is returning as the assistant principal. So there again, we've got some new and some existing at play there. Also at Salina K-8, in the junior high section, we have some new faces. With Mr. Maxfield's move to the principal's role, we have Miss Mahaley Threet, also known as Miss Mahaley Roten. I always forget her married name.
I do that all the time.
Yep. And so Miss Mahaley was a face that we saw in 7th and 8th grade social studies when she was a student teacher for Mr. Maxfield, as well as she was the Spanish teacher for the online course at the high school. So she's she's new to social studies in junior high this year. In the place of Mr. Maxfield, we also have Mr. Ben Upton as the 7th and 8th grade science teacher at Salina K-8. And we also have a coming home person. We have Miss Tina Drumright, who was a Clay County resident.
Miss Tina
she's,
Beard, if yep. her maiden name, I
yep.
believe.
Miss Tina Beard, as she may be known. And she's going to be taking 7th and 8th grade math at Salina K-8.
So, okay. Now, I think we had some openings at Hermitage Springs for teacher positions. Did we?
We did. With a little bit of transition, Mr. James Franklin is moving from Hermitage Springs to Clay County High School. At Hermitage Springs, he was the 5th through 8th grade ELA teacher. And at Clay County High School, he will be teaching 11th and 12th grade ELA, so English 3 and 4. So they're going to welcome Mr. James Franklin. He's been a face that's been there before, so he feels like he's coming home again.
I tell you what, let's do. Let's stop on that for a minute. We'll work in a few words from sponsors and come back and give you time to collect your thoughts since you're getting to sit here by yourself a few minutes. And
that's right.
We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Let's face it, we are not the most patient people on earth. We've become accustomed to having instant solutions to most any need. Macon Bank and Trust now offers an instant solution for your spending needs with Card at Once, an instant issue MasterCard debit card. Come in, open your account, and walk out with your new debit card. No waiting. Macon Bank and Trust, member FDIC and equal housing lender. Come grow with us.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing, too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness. With a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists, they serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
all of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
You may not realize how important three letters can be. For a patient who needs type A, B, or O blood, these letters can mean life. But there simply aren't enough people giving blood. Without more donors, hospitals may not have the blood needed to save lives. That's why the American Red Cross needs people to help restore the A's, B's, and O's that are depleting each day. You are the missing type patients need. Visit redcrossblood.org/missing types or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make your donation appointment today.
Welcome back, everyone. I think Mr. Eldridge got a phone call and he had to leave us, but we are in good hands, sounds like. Missy, I know we were talking about, you know, some of the changes, and I think you've taken us a little break to make sure that you've got some notes and ain't missed anybody.
That's right. I don't want to get in trouble for leaving anybody out. We also have, and I kind of left some people out at the high school, so I'm glad I took some notes. At the high school, I mentioned Miss Tia as the principal of Clay County High School, but we also have Mr. Matt Crackhead heading up the Ag Science Department at Clay County High School, so another one of our own that we're very eager to provide opportunities for our students.
And can I ask you a question about is Miss Hatcher still in the system?
Yes.
Okay.
Miss Beth Hatcher moved to Hermes Springs School. Hermes Springs School had a spike in enrollment in their first grade, and so she's going to use her skills because she was also an elementary teacher. She had more than one license, more than one endorsement. So Miss Beth Hatcher is going to be a second teacher for first grade at Hermes Springs School. So she and Miss Wendy Copas will be great partners to lead the first grade.
Okay, let's get back to the high school. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. And so I am very excited for all of the CTE opportunities that we have for our students at Clay County High School because, like I mentioned before, Mr. Matt Crackhead, one of our own, is going to be leading the agri-science department there. Mr. Marshall Birch, through the spark or through the welding grant that we have, will be leading the welding department through TCAT. And then also we have the implementation of Mr. Robbie Strong, who will be heading an information technology class through TCAT. So lots of new opportunities for students to gain some workforce skills and hopefully spark an interest that will lead to a lifelong career. So for Clay County, that's a lot of variety of opportunities to provide to our students.
Okay, did you miss anything at KA when you went through?
So at Solana K-8, I mentioned Mr. Maxwell as the principal. We also welcome Ms. Courtney Bilbrey, Ms. Candace Kirk, and Ms. Dana Hammer, all to Solana K-8.
So we've got those down there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, right. So that's got us covered on that.
I think so.
Okay, now, we talked about the regular school day in the elementary grades. Mm-hmm. What can parents kind of look forward to if their child is there at K-8 or at Hermitage Springs School, the physical look of what they may see when they walk in?
In the classrooms, we have increased social distance as feasible. Now, I wish we had larger classrooms, and if you visited our school buildings, you know what our capacity is. But we've increased the distancing between students within the classroom. We're looking at different practices in the classroom that would limit contact, as well as changing our scheduling for hallway, bathroom, you know, I mentioned the water fountains before, and also our cafeteria. So we're implementing some distancing practices there. One example would be that during lunchtime at each of the schools, we are going to implement some distancing in the cafeteria, and to create that space, some students, some classes may be eating in the classroom on scheduled days to allow more space in the cafeteria. Also, kind of monitoring those touch items, so milk coolers, silverware, we're changing practices there. from the meal services side so that we can decrease contact. And also, within the school day, we're staggering times in the hallway. So we want to control the capacity of the hallway, not have crowds or groups where they would only have a certain amount of space and be forced to be closer to each other.
So that, and at the high school level, that's going to take some coordination there because, you know, usually the at 9 o'clock, everyone changed classes. Everyone went down the hall. But now you are a science class exchanging with an English class, and only those two classes would be out during the exchange, that kind of type thing.
So at Solana K-8 and Hermes Springs School, our 5th through 8th grade students who normally would have changed classes, so they would go to a locker, they would go to a new classroom, we're changing that. So we're going to have the students remain in one classroom throughout the day, and the teachers instead will rotate to those classrooms to provide instruction. So it's less environment changes for the student and less interactions in the hallway. At the high school level, we're staggering some of those times in the hallway to try to control class sizes and areas of the hallway. Now, they have larger hallways than the elementary school, so that's also a consideration. But also as a high school, the classrooms themselves, because the students will be moving from class to class at the high school just due to scheduling and the variety of classes, each classroom will be cleaned and sanitized between periods.
So a little bit longer time maybe between classes. But, you know, it would be kind of hard because, obviously, you said the variety of things offered that, you know, you really can't trade an entire class at one time, can you?
Because that's just not possible.
Then the next period, some of them are going to Spanish, some of them are going to world history and things like that.
And remember that in each class, the number actually in a seat may look different because some students are choosing the all virtual route.
Okay, now do you have any idea of the number of on-site students that you may have and the virtual?
So as of this morning, I looked right before I came. As of this morning, we have an online survey for parents or guardians to complete, and it was asking each parent to complete the survey to indicate how they plan to enroll their child for this school year. As of this morning, 75% of parents have chosen to enroll their student on campus, and 25% have chosen the all-virtual path.
You know, that's kind of a, I guess, a number because I think if we saw the national poll off here, that was the exact percentage of parents that would like to see their students, and we're going to see, if possible, their students back in the live classroom.
We've had about 480 responses, so when you work out the numbers, you know, it's, you know, we still have a lot of parents who haven't completed that survey yet because we should have about 1,000 students in the district. So that's almost half of our students in the district. And I think that a lot of parents are just waiting to decide because it is a hard decision. And we recognize that it's not an easy scenario for anybody to contemplate.
Okay, now the opening time, opening day.
Okay, so our teachers will be coming back for in-services on July 29th and 30th. And then we have a registration day on July 30th, and then our first full day for students is August the 3rd.
Okay, now, at the high school, when students arrive, there has to be a process there.
Yes.
What's it going to look like there, Missy, when they arrive at school?
Okay, so across the district, we have purchased and received some of those no-contact thermometers, the infrared thermometers, and so our guideline, and this was followed by CDC recommendations and local health professionals, is that 100.5 temperature or greater would be a quarantine stage. So the process will be when students arrive on campus, at the high school they will be checked upon entering campus. So if you have a fever or temperature of 100.5 or greater, you would be quarantined until a parent or a guardian could come pick you up. So if the parent or guardian is dropping you off, you just get back in the car, this will stay, they have a temperature of 100.5 or greater, and then it would be the parent's choice, well, do I think that they need to go to the doctor, that they need to be tested? Because at that point, it's just the first symptom being a temperature. At Solana K-8 and Hermes Springs School, similar process. when they arrive to each school building, by 8 o'clock, we're going to be checking temperature. So it may be that, student's homeroom teacher that sees them first, and they're going to take their temperature. And if they have a 100.5 or greater temperature, then we would quarantine that student until the parent or guardian can be contacted. And then that parent can decide what's the best choice for their child, whether it be, well, I think they have a cold, or I'm going to evaluate their symptoms, and then they make that decision for their child. Do I take them to the doctor, and what do I do from there? That way we protect the rest of the students that are in the building until we know from a health professional what the diagnosis is or what steps to take.
Yeah, have you considered, what about the school buses?
So with the busing, we're going to increase distancing on the busing, on each bus route. So what that would look like, if you are a rider of the bus and you get on at the beginning of the route, the bus driver is going to direct you to one area where all the members that are in your household will sit in that area. So that doesn't mean that there's five kids that live in a house, we're going to put them all on one seat. That's not safe. But we're going to ask you to sit in one area. So that might be two seats in, you know, that are in the same row. They're back to back because you've been in the household with those students and you've already had contact with them. And so then the next household that enters the bus, they're going to sit in a separate area. And we're going to do that throughout the route so that the students that are on the route the longest are distanced. Now, toward the end of the route, we may have to start filling in those gaps as necessary because we don't know what each bus route, the load is going to look like. But that's the students that are riding the longest will have the most distance in between.
Okay,
households.
What about temperature checks for them as they get off the bus? Or?
So it's as they get off the bus. Now, the issue some parents have asked about whether the bus driver is going to take the temperature. Our issue with that, if we've consulted with state troopers and some of our transportation people, the issue with that is if you have a bus stop where multiple students are getting on the bus, I'm going to say an apartment complex. So if you have an apartment complex where you may have 12, 14 students getting on the bus at one time, you're going to have a line of students along the shoulder of the road. And so even though that temperature check may only take 3 to 5 seconds, that's time spent that driver is parked on a highway or a road that may be in a hazardous area,
yeah,
and a car might not see that they are stopped. And also that also is the possibility of students being lined up on the shoulder, and that's also a precaution and that's a safety hazard that if a car attempted to pass the bus, which is not advisable at all, but if it were to happen, that would put the students at risk. And so for those reasons, we've been advised not to have our bus drivers take temperatures just because of the liability and the risk to students in a household. And even if you had 4 students in a house getting on the bus at the same time, that's quite a, you know, that's a few seconds that we hope nothing would happen. But if the students are at risk, we have to make the best choice possible, and that's taking the temperatures at school.
Okay, so, I guess that's probably the only sensible thing to do, and hopefully that the social distancing on the bus,
mm-hmm,
we'll take care of that.
And we're going to increase ventilation on the bus. Of course, the summer months, that's not a question.
Okay, I know that this is also a controversial thing. Has it been considered students riding the bus wear masks?
For our district, masks are optional.
Okay.
So if you as a parent or a guardian want your child to wear a mask, that's a practice that you're going to implement with them at home, because when they go out in public or if you're in public areas, then that's going to be a practice that you already have in place for your student. For as of now, and remember, everything is fluid,
right,
and changeable.
Yeah.
As of now, our district's policy is that face masks are optional. So that's going to be kind of a parent instruction. We're going to encourage them in areas where the social distancing is less, because it's face masks are advised by the CDC, so it's an option.
Well, Melissa, have you got anything to wind down with?
I want the parents and guardians to know that we recognize and respect that this is a very hard time for us as a community, but even more so for us as a school, because like I said before, our students are the priority. Everything else is just making that difficult right now. So we recognize that this is a very difficult decision, about you sending your students back to school and how you're going to send them back to school. Appreciate that we know that it's a hard decision, and we want to help you in any way possible. So you can contact each of our schools, and we'll try to answer the questions that you have to the best of our ability, knowing that we don't have all the answers, but we will try to find them out and serve your student in the best way possible.
Okay, I think we have forgot one thing, and that is, can you change your mind once it starts on the virtual and the...
Okay, so right now, and remember this is an ever-changing policy, our recommendation is that if a parent or guardian decides to opt into all virtual instruction, we ask you to stay in that model of instruction for at least 4.5 weeks, and that's the length of one of our grading periods,
okay,
before they would get a report card.
So we are adding quite a bit of flexibility.
Yes.
Some systems say if you sign up, you're there for the whole thing.
And then we're suggesting if you decide to make a change at the end of a grading period, that you make it one change per school year. But I'm going to stress that every situation is different, and there'll be a review process that if you ask for more than one change in a school year, we will evaluate that circumstance, because there are things that we cannot expect, and that's going to be health mandates, virus changes, it may be local or state health mandates, and it may just be personal things that happen within your household that you cannot plan for.
Right.
And so because of that, we do have some flexibility in a review of that. We do recommend one change per school year at the end of a grading term, and that would be every 4.5 weeks.
I think that's kind of been a policy we've had about changing physical schools here, and so that's not
something
that they're not used to. That,
yeah, if you want to change between Salina Cade and Herman Springs.
You can do that like once a year.
Yeah,
so.
Once a year. But not, like I said, every situation is different.
But this is a different situation, but it's not something they're not used to being aware of.
That's right. It's a little bit of familiar with a little bit of extra importance to it.
Well, Missy, it's been a pleasure having you here this morning.
It's been great having you.
And I'm sure that sometime within about 4 to 6 weeks, we want you to come back again. Once we've tried it, once we've tried things and started, and we see how things are working. And make Mr. Matt a note, too, that he's supposed to come with you.
Will do.
Thank you. And I'm going to read the birthdays, and you can kind of ease out if you want to.
Okay.
And
thank you so much for your attention.
Hey, thank you. On our birthday and anniversary this morning, got quite a list here this morning. While Missy's getting out and Kevin's coming in, we'd like to go through this, and they're not in any particular order. Beginning with, David and Shirley Sharp celebrated... 51st anniversary, and I believe that was on the 15th, and I believe their son Alan is celebrating a birthday today. We'd like to wish all of those folks happy anniversary and happy birthday. And also looking down our list here, Mr. Mark Ashlock celebrated a birthday on the 14th, Susan Craig Scoville on the 15th, Billy Bly on the 15th, and a former student of mine, I know some of her folks are still here in the county. Miss Katie Thompson celebrated a birthday on the 12th. Emily Moss on the 13th. Joanne Terry on the 12th. Willis Walker on the 10th. Michael Carr on the 12th. Logan Watson on the 15th. And then also happy birthday to Shelby Short. His wife Mildred called in for Steph and granddaughter Savannah, and then also I believe now I couldn't not real sure on the name, but I think Mr. Ron Short called in to wish him a happy 73rd birthday. So happy birthday goes out to Shelby Short. And also this week on the 12th, Mike Denton celebrated a birthday, and then Liz Brown called in a couple of birthdays this week. Landon Birdwell on the 13th, and Allie Jo Pitcock on the 15th. So we had quite a list this morning, but remember the number 243-5574. And speak slowly and clearly into the answering machine. With that, we'll take a little short break. We'll come back, and Mr. Kevin Donaldson's made it in with us, and we're going to talk about what's going on here in the state of Tennessee with the COVID and other pertinent things here in the county. We'll be back just in a minute.
Identity theft is the fastest growing crime in America, and fraud is a threat to all of us. That's why Macon Bank and Trust SecureLock makes great sense. This easy-to-use mobile app allows you to protect your debit card, turning it on and off as needed. And you can customize your card by setting certain permissions. Want to know more about how to protect yourself and your money? Then talk with us today. Macon Bank and Trust. member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Come grow with us.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing, too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
You may not realize how important three letters can be. For a patient who needs type A, B, or O blood, these letters can mean life. But there simply aren't enough people giving blood. Without more donors, hospitals may not have the blood needed to save lives. That's why the American Red Cross needs people to help restore the A's, B's, and O's that are depleting each day. You are the missing type patients need. Visit redcrossblood.org/missing types or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to make your donation appointment today.
Welcome back, everyone. Kevin's made in with us. Before we start with him, the old history teacher here, I ran across three or four things that I thought were extremely interesting today, and some of them kind of maybe in a different way, but looking back through things that happened on this day, in the year of 1867, there were a couple of things that happened. And one, D.R. Averill of Ohio patented the first ready-mixed paint. And also during this year, Joseph Manure patented the first reinforced concrete. And, you know, we look around now and we wonder what we would have built without these two patents and what it would look like. And then another very important one, the first X-ray photo of arterial circulation. Kevin, I thought I'd put that out there for you.
Yeah, as a heart patient, that's important.
And looking at this, I ran across this, and I did not know about this one, even though I'd studied this over the years. The first test detonation of an atomic bomb, Trinity site, Alamogordo, New Mexico, was set off as part of the U.S. Manhattan Project. But a neat part of that was I ran across this name called the Calatron Girls. And I said, well, you know, and it showed there with it that one of them said she didn't know what she was doing until she saw a moving exhibit of this when she was well up into years. The Calatron Girls were a group of young women, mostly high school graduates, who joined World War II efforts in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and their job in 1945. And, of course, they did not know what they were doing, but they were monitoring calutron dials and monitors and meters, which a mass spectrometer which separates uranium isotopes. They had no idea what they were doing, that they were actually totally involved in this. And also, this is the day that Apollo 11 was launched. Kevin, I had to throw that in.
That's good info. Interesting things.
I bet it's cut us pretty short this morning.
Well, that's perfect.
Better hop
right.
in and get done.
Kind of hard to follow the scoop, folks. That was a lot of very valuable information, for sure. And I hope that helped educate our general populace on what some of the protocols and procedures will be as schools reopen here in Clay County and across the state and nation. A lot of discussion about that right now. And all you got to do is go to Facebook or anywhere else, and you'll see information. Well, we've seen neighboring Monroe County info on Facebook and Overton County and Putnam about reopening procedures, and it's a different time because of COVID. And I guess we'll kick off our brief segment here with a little bit of a COVID update. Thomas thought it would be at least a change of pace to not necessarily talk about the total numbers. I mean, all you got to do is turn on your TV or get on your computer and find those numbers. One thing that I thought would be interesting, and I guess I thought it was interesting because of what I saw about Clay County, is the percentage of population tested. Statewide, we've got a population estimated of about 6.8 million in Tennessee, and 1.1 million have been tested. That's 16% of the population. Clay County, we've got an estimated, we don't know for sure, population of just a little over 7,600, and we are approaching 1,000 people tested, 972 as of yesterday's numbers. So we have had 13% of the population of Clay County tested, just a wee bit behind the state average, but a lot of testing going on out here in the rural areas, too. It's not just the big cities.
You know, and pretty easy procedure here, isn't it, Kevin? You just basically you can drive up, and within four, five, 10 minutes, you can be out of there, and they'll get the results back in about 2 to 3 days.
Absolutely.
Pretty quick. We're not talking about those weak weights.
And I don't know that this applies to every testing station, for example, here in Clay County or anywhere else, but I did see a news today on TV that says the testing procedure is not quite as intrusive as it was in the early days. You know, you'd see an example of that, and that swab was going way up into the nasal cavity.
You were wondering how that 6-inch swab.
Well, it couldn't have been comfortable. Now, I did see in a can again. I don't know that this is across the board of where now they can just kind of just barely go up in there and do a swab and get the results as well. Now, I don't know if that's nationwide or not.
You know, I'd say that may have something to do with the amount of the sample they need to actually get the testing done sometimes.
Could be.
Because I guess early on, they were really concerned about making sure that they had enough of a sample to work with.
Right. Thomas, something else we've been talking about for a while, and we won't need to talk about it very long here, of course, is the census. We again want to urge everyone to self-respond if you can. Now, what has happened here in Clay County and other places as well, we basically have had no movement in the numbers for 2 to 3 weeks. I'm at a loss to remember exactly how far back it is, but we have had no change in the percentage of folks who have self-responded here in Clay County for at least that amount of time. So I guess it's safe to say that everybody who has self-responded has done that, but there's still time. But it's only a short time now, a matter of days really now rather than weeks, unless the deadline is moved again, before census workers will begin knocking on doors. And right now we have less than 50% of the people in Clay County that have self-responded. So the census door knockers will have a bigger chore than they had even 10 years ago. We wound up with about 58 or 59% of the people in Clay County who self-responded, and now we're at 47%. So, and the reason I know it won't be long unless that schedule is moved again, the census workers will actually be gathering at the chamber for training sessions here very shortly. Just I think maybe the last day of this month and the early part of August. To get their final instructions before they hit the road and start that door knocking campaign. So that's right here.
Can you think of any reason why maybe we haven't had the response, the self-response? Did we do a thing where we sent notes? Of course, we didn't have. That's what I was wondering about, the notes home with school kids.
That would have helped, no doubt about that. The campaign would have been started in probably mid-April through the school system, and we had some plans to do some of those things here as well. And of course, that didn't happen here or anywhere else. But it's kind of a puzzle to me in a way that we have, a lot of folks have been home out of necessity due to COVID-19 and in different ways, and you would think there's more opportunity to have responded this time than there was 10 years ago, and more ways to respond. But that's not just a Clay County phenomenon. I've looked at some other areas in Upper Cumberland, and it's a pretty prevalent thing that everyone is running behind their 2010 self-response. So I don't know. It's a little bit of a mystery to me. You would think with maybe more time to do it and different ways to do it. Of course, you can do it by phone. You can do it online this time, that the numbers would have been higher, but it hadn't played out that way.
Well, you know, that's kind of like the same thing with the IRS. You know, there was an extension granted, and the day before the extension ended, folks got worried then. Didn't you? Maybe that'll happen here.
Well, I guess that's human nature. It doesn't matter when a deadline is, we're going to push it as far as we can.
And, give ourselves, you know, we'll get that done tomorrow. Kevin, I don't know, did you hear when Missy was talking about when they did the survey of the, I asked her a question about the students that were going to be involved in virtual and one that would be on.
Right. I didn't catch all that. Please remind all of us about that.
She just said that, you know, I guess a nationwide survey, 75% of the parents wanted their students. Well, guess what Clay County was, the responders, 75%.
Well, we're right in line there, aren't we?
With the rest of the country. And, you know, that... statewide, we do know that it's expanding. It's just it's that multiplication thing. And you know, one times one, one times two, and you keep going two times. And finally, you know, we've got so many numbers that there's so many chances for the spread that it's kind of inevitable in the way that we have. I guess most of us have kind of looked at it as this is something that's going to happen to someone else, and I'm. You know, I'm 10 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, that's kind of a traditional thought we've always had. And we, I think most of us haven't really looked at the mental side of the mask. You know, I don't need a mask. I hadn't got that. Well, you know, that may be true, but now we're finding out that so many people are actually carrying the virus that aren't showing any kind of symptoms.
Right. They're asymptomatic, so... they're carrying it and don't even realize it. And that's a possibility for any of us.
Right. And, you know, and there's so many, when this thing first started, you know, there was that certain segment of the population that this wasn't going to affect and that kind of thing. And so far, I don't think very much of that has panned out, has it?
Well, it's interesting to look at it and to think back to what the numbers were 3 months ago, for example. You know, looking at it on a local basis, you know, we stayed in single digits of overall cases for a long, long time. And if my memory serves me correctly, our latest number is that there have been 28 confirmed cases in Clay County. And we keep hearing these overall numbers, and the overall numbers are important, but I guess I'm at the point now, I want to know how many current cases are there.
Yeah.
And, of course, that information's available, but we don't really hear it as much as we do the overall. You know, we've got 28 cases, but I think only maybe 5 or 6 or 7 of those are active cases. Everybody else has recovered.
Right. You know, I'm wondering if, you know, that needs to be a statistic that's emphasized more than, you know, I think a whole lot of that is, of course, for shock value to try, you know, to convince people, you know, that it, you know, what it actually is. But, you know, shock value aside, I think for information-wise, we do need to know. Each county needs to know how many active cases they've got.
Right. And you can go online and get that info, but it's not as readily available through the media, I guess, as what I'd like to see. I'd like to see that number emphasized as much as the total number of cases.
And you know, as we know, on the, one of the upsides is, you know, that we don't have a lot of places here of congregated job sites, do we? I mean, that's something here in this county.
Not like we once did, no.
I mean, no. I don't know. The largest employer we have here, I'm not sure exactly how many folks they've got working there. And I do know some of our larger employers, like the Honest Abe folks, that are large, but a lot of their work is outside work. And
it's with a breeze blowing through, which matters a whole lot, apparently. Our larger manufacturing employers are really in situations where folks aren't shoulder to shoulder working. You know, now, way back when the garment industry was such a huge part of our situation here in Clay County, that was quite different. You know, I mean, people weren't shoulder to shoulder, but they were in pretty close proximity. But we don't have that nearly as much anymore. That's true.
You know, and the tracking thing, it's kind of, you know, it's some of us that are semi-NASCAR fans actually, you know, sat and watched part of that thing last night, and we're looking at, I believe it was, they said about 30,000 people in a 100,000 seat venue.
Right.
And I'm wondering if I'm sure someone's going to be tracking those folks to see, you know what kind of effect that had. I'm sure the NASCAR folks will, so they can determine whether or not they want to try something like that again later. But, you know, that's going to be interesting.
Well, turning to another sport or two, of course, I'm a golfer, big golf fan, and golf has started back without fans, totally. And it's really interesting to see a golfer make a crucial putt, and there's no applause at all. You know, of course, golf applause is muted compared to many sports, but to see a guy make a crucial shot or putt and there's nothing, you know, no crowd response. You know, as an athlete, that's got to affect you, doesn't it? I mean, if you were playing basketball or football or baseball in front of an empty stadium, that's a different thing. You coach for a long time.
Well, you know, that you get into that. It's kind of strange on that with the different sports. I know with golf, tennis, too, that comes up just right off the bat, is, you know, you're not supposed to cheer them on while they're attempting to do something.
Right.
But then when you get to a basketball game or a football game, the field goal kicker or whatever, you know, 14 million people are there screaming, you know, for you to miss it.
Absolutely.
And the same thing with a foul shot in basketball.
Yeah.
But, you know, in tennis, you know, basically, you're supposed to sit there, you know, and not there's no cheering allowed.
Not until the point's over.
No, no. And same thing in golf, until, you know, the putt is attempted. You know, if it's a good one, you cheer. But most of the time, if it's a bad one, there's a few oohs and ahs. But other than that,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of strange that supposedly some athletes are supposed to have more quiet to concentrate than some of the others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's interesting to note, too, and I know we're headed down the home stretch here. A lot of the football things that we've been looking at now are beginning to be canceled. You know, there are two small major college football conferences that have already said, we're not going to play football this fall. And I know we need to do a birthday here.
Yeah, we do.
Anniversary.
It's actually an anniversary today. I got a number drawn out here. David and Shirley Sharp.
Congrats.
Congratulations to them. And Kevin, I'll write that down so you don't forget it when they come to get there.
Thank you. I often forget that.
But with that, I guess it's time we do. We shut the doors here and shut it down. And it's, like I said, we had a great show today, great information that we've had here in the past few minutes. Sorry, Kevin, we couldn't get you just a little more, but it's kind of hard to get Missy stopped when she got started.
Well, I'm glad she did. Now, it's good to be here.
An excellent spokesman, and she said she's in a new position. And if today's exhibition here on radio is any example of what we can expect, I believe she's going to make a tremendous supervisor of instruction for the school system.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to thank Mr. Matt for coming by, and I know he got an emergency call and had to leave. But with that, we're going to shut the doors, and may the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet you again, and hopefully we'll meet you here next week on WVFB-FM 101.5 Kicks Country. Remember, 6 o'clock tonight. Then don't forget to call in if you want to win one of the birthday and anniversary cakes. And with that, I guess, Clay County, good day.
Thanks for being with us today for the Clay County Corner on Kicks Country. We thank all of our interesting guests, and we thank all of our fine sponsors. Our sponsors take pride in and care about our community. So when the need arises, make sure you visit them, or just give them a call and tell them thanks for sponsoring the Clay County Corner. So until next Thursday morning at 9, we hope you have a great week.